Welcome to Manager Tools. Our executives, managers. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. Are executives managers? Should executives do manager things? When should executives not behave like managers? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
The cast, like, are executives or managers? There's no question we're going to talk about roadmap. If you're a manager, you want roadmap, you want to buy a license to Manager Tools so you can get access to roadmap as an individual to help you roll out the Trinity, one-on-ones, feedback, coaching and delegation when it comes time, and to measure your work privately for yourself. And if you're an executive and you're thinking about upgrading the value, the effectiveness of management in your organization, it's not about buying training. It's not. It's about measuring behavior after the training. And the best way to do that, the only way that we know how, with an app geared to specific manager behaviors that can be taught, is with Roadmap. Come to the website, click on the Roadmap on the front page, and we'll tell you all about it.
We hear this question all the time. How come executives don't do all the stuff managers do? I mean, I go to training, but they don't. I do one-on-ones. They don't. I do feedback. They don't.
They've actually evolved to a higher form of personage that doesn't require food.
Well, they do, yeah. They just have to think effectiveness, and all of a sudden, all their managers, all their directs are effective, right? That's the way it works.
Yeah. I've said before, I'm sure I've said a few times over the years, it's been nearly 13 years we've been doing this. I just came. We're recording at 10 o'clock at night on a Wednesday night, and I just came from a client event. I'm presenting tomorrow to the client, and there was 300 or 400 people in the room. It was an award ceremony, and there was so much energy, so much positivity, and so many of the people got up, executives who got awards for the entire year, that thanked people on their team, legal, financial. These are salespeople often.
That's awesome.
And it was just so different than what I'm used to. And I've told the story so many times of the CEO who calls and says, "Hey, I got a problem with my team. I want you to fix it." I said, "Okay, well, let's get together and, you know, I'll come and talk to you and talk to them and see." He says, no, you don't need me. I'm fine. Fix them." Or the head of HR or the COO who says, "I want you to train all the managers in the company." I said, "Okay, let's start with the people at the top." And we don't need it. You know, we're obviously good managers. We got to be executives. Yeah, bad sign.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about the HR executive who pulls you aside and says, dude, he's not solvable. He's not fixable. Right? That's right. I need your help anyways. Can you just ignore him?
Yeah.
It's sad when we hear that. It really is.
Yeah.
And we do. Just, I'm not making it up.
We hear it all the time. Yeah. So folks, if you've ever wondered whether executives at other companies, not yours, particularly if you're new in your career and you've only been at one or two companies, maybe you're thinking that your company's an outlier, that at other places, executives engage in manager behaviors because, you know, you realize the ones that your company don't. The answer is probably no, they don't elsewhere either. The executives at other firms are just like the ones at yours. They don't do the stuff they ought to do as managers. And yeah, you're right. They're still managers. That's not hard to figure out. The math on that is pretty easy. They just don't want to have to be. They don't want to have to do manager behaviors. And they can get away with it. And they do. And this cast is to make clear that and to exhort you to not be that when you become a leader, an executive in your organization. 2 points. I'm sure this is a kind of a long cast, Mike, but I'm going to try to be fast. We only have 2 points in the outline. And the first one is executives are managers. And point number two is, but they don't behave like it.
Okay, so convince me. I mean, executives are managers, right? They have directs that work to them.
Yeah, there you go.
They're responsible for all the things managers are responsible for, which
you
is...
You just cut 25 minutes out of the length of the cast.
Oh, so I like to do that. So good. Let's point two then.
Yeah, executives really are managers. They have managerial duties almost completely similar to managers at lower levels of the organization. And if you're looking up and you don't see executives behaving like managers, it's those executives' fault. Okay? You don't have to look any farther than that. Now look, we're not saying here that managerial duties are the only duties that executives have. In fact, one of the big problems with solving this 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag is executives have some special duties that weigh heavily. And we want them to take care of those executive duties. And we'll talk about what those are in a minute.
And there are things that only they can do, right? And they're important things.
Yeah. In fact, one of the most important lessons I ever learned about executives, particularly CEO jobs, or regardless of what position you call her, the top non-board person in an organization, that that person should do the things that only that person can do. The idea that you're paying a CEO or president or managing director 3 to 4 times, which wouldn't be unusual, of his or her direct reports, and you would have the CEO doing something that a direct report would do, is just fiduciarily unsupportable. And once you start saying that about the CEO, then you have an immediate domino effect on the next level, the next level, the next level. Yeah, there are some things that only executives can do. It's a function of, we want them to have earned the right with the experience that we wouldn't entrust that decision to just anybody. They have to have a long history and proven track record, and ideally with our firm and so on. But the reason, the fundamental reason why there's even an excuse for this cast, there's even a question about executives being managers or not, it's partially nomenclature. That's 1%. But the other one is because of 99% of it is how executives behave around their managerial duties. Look, it's nomenclature because if executives are still managers, why don't we just call them managers? Why do we have C-suite? And for those of you who don't know, we didn't have C-suite 20 years ago. That is an inflation of titles. Just like if you're an individual manager, if you're a manager right now, if your title is director and you have individual contributors reporting to you, in other words, you don't have managers of other people reporting to you, you're not really a director. Your company inflated your title, called you a director. Some companies fall for it when they hire you and think that you're a manager of managers. And director means manager of managers. It's, you know, that it was that way for 80 years. No, look, I'm not against change, but I don't like changing things just to fool people. That's not good. But the reason we call executives executives is because there are some specialized responsibilities that they have. And it confuses managers when they say, well, oh, that's an executive, so he's not a manager anymore. Not so. Because the definition of manager is easy, right? That's just somebody who has people reporting to them. For the most part, the reason I started thinking about this cast a couple of years ago was, and I don't mean this as an attack on executives, folks, I don't. I think a lot of, you know, just off the top of my head, just now, I said to myself, the two Dans, Dan West, Dan McGuire, but I'm also thinking about Trevor and about Eldon, about Lauren, about Karen, people who are friends of mine and who are executives. And these people don't do what I'm about to suggest. Otherwise, I hate to tell you, I'm not naturally a nice person. They wouldn't be my friends if they did this. Most executives set a poor example for managers regarding their managerial duties. You know, managers look up at executives and then we get this question and they think to themselves, why does my boss barely even bother with managing me while he still expects me to manage my team? Aren't I on his team just like my folks are on my team? If he wants me to have a good relationship with my people, why doesn't he bother bending his little finger in my direction? He won't even do that to have a good relationship with me. So if you've thought those kind of thoughts before, folks, you're normal. And we're going to spend a minute and define executives and managers and maybe give you some parameters around the discussion. It is not a black and white discussion. It is not a 0 and 1. I saw on a TV show I was watching the other day with my wife, Rhonda, one guy said, well, do we go 3, 2, 1, 0? And do you go on 0 or do you go on 1? And the other guy says, well, 0 is not even a number. It's just an idea. So we're going to try to define it, but it's not black and white.
Well, executives are easy, right? I mean, the executive are the people at the top. Those are the executives.
Yeah. And in fact, for many, many years in organizations, they were in part because the people who were the executives were actually the owners. And so therefore, they literally fit the perfect bill of someone who could get things done across the organization because they not only managed, they also controlled, they owned, which are, of course, two different things, which is harder to see nowadays because the stock market. Nothing wrong with the stock market, just diffuses understanding of people in terms of how organizations are run. But generally speaking, no, you're right, Mike. The people at the top is not a bad proxy for executive. Formally speaking, though, an executive is somebody in the organization who has the power to put plans into effect for the entire organization. Now, obviously, in a vertical organization, by definition, people at the top are the ones that have the authority to get the company executing on something. And I did a lot of questions in the field, so I'm just going to cover this very briefly, just two or three sentences here. Folks, if you're going to write me a note and say it shouldn't be this way, you got to get shit out of your vocabulary when it comes to managing. Secondly, you'll notice I didn't say they had the power to get the company executing. I said they had the authority. I'm going to start trying to use that distinction for everyone to help them understand. If you're against power somehow, first of all, no offense, oftentimes when I hear people are against power, it's because they don't have enough of it, which I find self-defeating. But I'm not talking about power. I'm talking about authority. I'm not talking about the ability to coerce or the ability to bring sanctions. I'm not talking about corruption, which is what authority that become corrupted is no longer ethical authority. It becomes power, and power sometimes rubs people the wrong way. But authority is one that is essentially granted by someone else. Mike has authority over me in many parts of the business because I trust him. So you can wish for a non-vertical organization, but there aren't many of them that have lasted that long. So we ought to get used to the biological imperative of humans tend to engage in vertical structures. There may be a better way, but not in our lifetime. But basically, in a vertical organization, it's people at the top are the ones that have the authority to get stuff done. Executive authority, usually at the top, is necessary for an effective organization to function. And again, that's because we said authority and not power. Now, what that typically means is that an executive has decision-making power for the organization. Now, decision-making power, for some of you who haven't been listening to us for a long time, is probably not what you think it is. Obviously, any manager has the authority to make decisions, but executives have authority to commit a significant portion of the organization towards their choice. But if you've been listening for a while, you know that a decision is not a choice, okay? In organizational terms, a decision is a choice combined with the plan of action to implement the choice. It's one thing to have an opinion. We all have them, sometimes lots. Some of us actually are in a position to make a choice. Lots of folks in organizations do that. But you only become an executive if you're at a level where your decision can affect the entire organization, and that decision is both the choice and the plan and action to implement. And usually that means resources as well. And look, because the decision-making is for the entire organization, it makes sense. Those with that decision-making authority are usually at the top of the organization. And if you're at the top, that means you have people underneath you. That's literally the definition of that. And that usually means you're a manager. There are rare exceptions, but generally speaking, if you're at the top, you manage someone else. Now, there are some CEOs who have two directs, a COO and an admin. And every other executive in the C-suite, the new last 20 years, every other executive reports to the COO, because that CEO is really good at ideas and leadership and vision and customers and competition and marketplaces and maybe government regulatory issues and so on, okay? And the COO is a great manager of people. At other companies, the CEO has 10 directs, and the COO is just one of them. And maybe engineering and manufacturing and support and legal and all that stuff reports to the COO. Okay, so it's different in different structures. Whether you have one or two or three or five people or 20 people reporting to you, you're a manager if you have direct reports. Because just like one definition of a leader is someone who has followers, one simplistic definition of a manager is one who has direct reports. And look, when we say manager, we're using the manager tools definition of that, which is managing other people. Please don't write me and talk to me about why we're wrong and then it should be called leader tools, because actually one of our companies is called leader tools. And we understand the difference between leadership and management, but it's not worth having a contest about. We're essentially, manager tools is for managers, and we use manager when we think of organizational structures. Whether you have 2 or 5 million in your company, it doesn't matter. If somebody reports to you, you're a manager. It's organizational argot, if you will.
Back to executives a bit. Do they have to be at the top to be an executive?
No. So, you know, Drucker gave us the phrase knowledge worker years ago. Certain knowledge workers in the organization could be executives based on their thought leadership or a special role without directs, which frankly they may very well have gotten because they're so good at ideas or technology or future or strategy, and they stunk at managing other people, and so they were too valuable to lose. So you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You structure a job that allows them to be effective. You don't put them in a job that requires them to do something they're not going to be any good at, because the chances, once you're 35, that you're going to suddenly become good at something that's important when you haven't before is pretty slim. No offense, guys, just what the data say. So yeah, you don't have to be at the top. So being at the top is a proxy for being an executive. Another way to talk about this, guys, is that virtually all executives are managers, but very few managers are executives, percentage-wise. And interestingly, I know some of you, if you really know your Drucker, you know Drucker would say that slightly different. His definition is more perfect and smarter, but ours is more useful for you. That's the distinction I'm going to make.
Okay. You got to say something. If you're going to go against Drucker, you got to have some position.
I do. The position I have is, I'm sorry. I'm not worthy. So to be an executive, to make decisions that affect the entire organization. Not everybody gets to do that. And guys, this is one of the elegant trade-offs of organizational economics. The organization says to individuals, if you don't know this, this is happening behind the scenes every day for you at work. The organization tells you, we will magnify what you can do in this structure, in this framework, in this lattice that is an organization, even with all the friction, even with the organizational tax you pay, because you can't work at home in your jammies and get up at 10 and take a nap at 2, we will magnify your effectiveness such that you can contribute as an individual to helping millions of other people on the planet while only paying a small price in terms of your freedoms and the amount of power you have because you give yourself over to some coercive, and the coercive is not the right word, let's say consequential effects. In other words, if you take the wrong action, there could be consequences. Now, look, that said, I told you we'd put parameters around the discussion. So there's a couple other ways you can see it besides just at the top or decision-making authority. We mentioned earlier at the top was a good proxy. Again, it's just a proxy and it can be misleading. The best example I know of this proxy failing is in smaller organizations. I mentioned CEO. I get cards from entrepreneurs, CEO of their company. I said, wow, how big? Yeah, it's just me and my partner. Whoa, dude, you're CEO of a 2-person company? Who reports to? Oh, we really haven't figured that out yet. Okay, well, that's fine. Yeah, you're not CEO. I mean, oh, you could actually say, we're both in the C-suite. And I think the only good answer to that is, sweet.
I wanted to say dude, but I just
I know you
couldn't. So then I couldn't resist letting, you know, saying it. So,
where's dude, my car?
Sweet. All right. Sorry, guys.
And of course, you have to say, and then, which is a very bad interviewing habit. Technology startups are classic for this, right? We've all seen the second or third employee of a startup get the title of COO because they're, you know, you start at the top from CEO and chairman of the board and work down. And somehow the title, weirdly, in a twisted sort of sense, confers executive level authority on the person because they have an executive title, and as opposed to they have the authority and then they're given the title. That's the equivalent of thinking that since middle class wage earners earn enough money to become homeowners, if we magically broaden the home market by making homes more affordable, we'll get more homeowners, and number four, we'll have a bigger middle class. That's the classic car before the horse, I mean, economically speaking. And of course, that's a case of creating a confusion because of you misunderstood correlation and causation. So being at the top doesn't necessarily confer executive status. Being at the top is a proxy. When you're a small organization, that logic breaks down because everyone is at the top. But folks, if you're a 3-person company and one of those people is a file clerk, your file clerk isn't an executive because he or she is close to the top. So I want to add to your thinking about executives in this way. A better way to think about being at the top is to actually redefine it as being far from the bottom. If you're in a small organization and at the top, you're also not far from the bottom. So you can't just assume you're an executive because you're at or near the top. You may be, but it's not a black and white situation. And the smaller your organization, the less likely you are an executive. Now, if you are a organization of one, good for you. Isn't freedom great? Isn't the pricing mechanism one of the greatest things in the history of mankind? And therefore, you know that the company will die without revenue. And so revenue comes from outside. You're learning that lesson, I'm sure, if you haven't already. And so therefore, you're an executive because you think about things outside, which we're going to come to. Okay, I mentioned earlier that we didn't want to talk about leadership management, but I do want to touch on that and talk about the role of leadership versus the role of management. We generally subscribe here at Manager Tools to the idea that leadership is doing the right thing and management is doing things right. The example I use is when you're given the task of painting a house, the manager who worries about doing things right, worries about having the right paint and having the right equipment and the right crew size. The leader makes sure that they start painting the right house to begin with. Similarly, leaders worry about effectiveness, doing the right things, and managers worry about efficiency and really productivity as well, which is pursuing those ends intelligently. And look, it's not black and white. Again, we're giving you parameters here. We're giving you almost a very multivariated Venn diagram here. Because both managers and executives worry about both effectiveness and efficiency. It's a question of degree because both are necessary. If you choose the right thing to work on and you do it poorly, you're going to go out of business. If you choose the wrong thing, you're going to go out of business. So you have to do both. But that doesn't mean everybody has to worry equally about both all the time. Everybody will go crazy. So, as a general rule, leaders and managers think differently. Additionally, we're going to throw another set of parameters at you relative to two important concepts: location, where they think about, and time, when they think about. Executives generally think about issues outside the organization: customers, competition, the market. Managers generally think about internal issues like productivity and resource management. And in terms of time, executives think about long-term success. Somebody's got to be thinking 5 years down the road. And managers think about short-term goals that support the long-term mission. The best example I ever heard of a person who was born an executive, and by that I mean a leader. When he was in the Army, he was a leader of men and soldiers, and now as an executive, he's been CEO numerous times, always successfully, is my good friend, John Hoffman. When I was helping John find a job out of the Army, I said, "What do you think you're going to do?" He says, "Well, I'm going to go to Applied Materials," which is a company that made the machines that made silicon chips. And John, to this day, still will chuckle and say, "I don't understand the physics. They use integral signs in the math here, and I think the speed of light is involved in some of the calculations." And he laughs and goes, "I can't believe they let me in charge of this thing." But when he was making his decision, he says, "Mark, I'm not smart enough to know which company to choose. I know I like the people there, but more importantly, how could I?" This is in, we're talking 1988, 89, he's doing this. "Why would I choose any other industry but computers? There's going to be a rising tide there for the next 30 years. So he was thinking 30 years out. He knew, "All I have to do is choose the right industry and I'll be okay. I'm not going to choose buggy whips. I'm not going to choose newspaper. I'm not going to choose printing. I'm going to choose electronics, computers." And he was right. He always thought long term. And I was like, "Darn it, he did it again. He's thinking longer term than me." The executive's responsibility to think long term, if you don't know this, derives from her focus on effectiveness, doing the right thing. Because an organization always derives its mission and serves its purpose only when there are external results. If you do the wrong things, even if you do them well, you won't get the results you're supposed to get and your organization won't last. If you do the right things, even if you stumble through them, you at least have a chance of lasting. So in this way, when we talk about leadership and executives, we sort of clump those two together. They basically have the same brief, which is achieving the vision and mission of the organization. And an organization can't very well achieve its mission if it fails to continue to operate. It just can't. So an executive or a leader is responsible for the long-term viability of the organization. In the beginning, you get to the long-term viability of the organization by worrying incessantly about the short-term viability. But at some point, when you have a going concern, somebody has to start thinking 5 years out. Otherwise, you're going to start managing by the minute, and nobody's good enough to keep up with that when you've got 100, 200, 500, 1,000, 10,000 employees. And remember, I want to say this again, results of every organization always happen, always come from, always originate outside the organization. And I will tell you, folks, when I read that in Peter Drucker, it was maybe the most profound thing I've ever read about management in my life. When I read about the importance of relationships between boss and direct, that was not as profound as the aha moment. Maybe everybody else gets it, and I just was slow to the party. It could happen. That results always happen outside the organization. Everything that happens inside the organization is a cost. It's not a result. Being green on a project still costs money. Until the project comes to fruition and customers pay for the value that's inherent in the project, still just a cost, not a result. And effectiveness means achieving results, which means executives must focus a significant portion of their attention on external factors.
Which they all control, right? That's what makes it so much fun.
Yeah. So the whole issue with leadership and management has been made hard. The reason why we don't really delve into the vocabulary here is the discussion, you know, there's so much out there. I can picture books that I've bought and read, and I'm sure many people like them, but I don't like them. Leadership treatises, the 51 ways that you're going to become a great leader, or the book that has leader, just follow these principles, a word with an L, a word with an E, and a word with an A, a word with a D. Like, seriously, do you think God and all of his infinite wisdom taught the principles of leadership by making an acronym for words you're going to... No. In fact, I only think we have one CAS ever. No, I take that back. Two CAS. I would encourage anybody to write me at mahorseman@manager-tools.com and tell me which two CAS you think they are, have an acronym or something where first letters of words were significant. The first one, I think people will get. The second one, I don't think they'll get. So there's so much encouragement, exhortation, if you will, to become personally a leader in the form of risk-taking and example setting as an individual. And that's a good thing. There's certainly a place for individual leadership, but it's easily confused with, hey, I'm a leader, so therefore, me and that executive, we had the same responsibilities, we're all leaders. No, I'm sorry. What we're talking about is you as an individual leading within your individual sphere. That doesn't make you a leader of the entire organization who has the burden of the entire organization and whose decisions affect the entire organization fairly directly. So we're not going to get into that discussion. And we've generally stayed away from the topic, sort of like the Scylla and the Charybdis. The further you sail away from one, the closer you get to the other. Look, here's the simple way to think about it. Almost all executives are managers simply because they have directs. They have a team of people to manage too, and they should, and there I go, with quotes around it, they should do manager things. But the reason this cast exists is they don't.
That's it, everyone, for this week. We'll finish this one up next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long, folks.